This is Phantom Electric Ghost, and we're live on the air with Monica Pitts. You're a techie, quirky problem solver, and you happen to design websites. Welcome to the Phantom Electric Ghost podcast. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm excited to be here.
So I want to let people know, business points out of the way. We are a featured podcast on Newsly. You can see that little icon up there. Mm-hmm. And if you want to check that out, that's an audio-only platform. You can use that coupon code to Ghost and get 1 month free, so you don't have to pay. You can check out what that sounds like. We'll be on Newsly later tonight with this episode. We do have mayyecreate.com link. I'm not going to speak the whole thing because you'll be able to click through on that when we're published on any of the sites that we're on. So then if people want to connect with you, I guess that's your primary website.
Yep, that's our primary website, and that's actually a link to our most popular downloadable free resource, which is a guide that tells you what to put on your website.
Okay, great. So now one of the first things I always ask any guest at the beginning is the two questions I ask everybody. What motivates you and why do you do what you do?
I think I'm just motivated by solving problems in general and finding answers to things, and so that makes web design a perfect fit for me. And my team and I all share that value. We love a challenge. We love to solve problems. And so we build websites to solve problems for other people. We like to make websites that work for businesses and make them proud to send people to their website, but also not make it a pain in their butt and help them build their business through it.
That's cool. So what made you want to get into web design? Was there something that you were doing before or you always wanted to do this? Like maybe tell your story.
Well, I got a degree in agriculture. And so when I was going through college, I took multiple journalism classes, probably one a semester. And one of those classes was about building websites. Now, as I went out and started interviewing for jobs, I just thought I should bring a portfolio with me. And so I did. And my first internship was building a website for a company because they were like, hey, this girl can build websites. And then from there, I went and worked for an internet service provider building websites. I then went into an agency and I built websites for them. And then I decided to start my own business, and now I'm building websites for other people still.
It's interesting because do you find with all the like companies that have like these big corporations that have like tools that allow people to kind of do their own, that you still find people that want a customized site that don't want to deal with those kind of corporate like do-it-yourself process type of sites?
Yeah, well, I think that when people start their business, oftentimes their budget forces them to do something like a do-it-yourself site. And then as they grow, they start outsourcing certain things. Like you stop doing your own taxes, you stop doing your own bookkeeping, you know, you hire someone to help you answer your email or answer the phone. And your website falls into those categories because you build it once and it'll last you for multiple years. So I always think as an entrepreneur, I should be doing and learning how to do the things that I would do over and over again that'll help me build my business. And then those one-off things that I need to have done, I like to have someone help me do them. Yeah. Like, I don't know how to do my taxes. I really don't. I just sign the paperwork and it happens. So there are still so many people that hire professional web developers. And there's a lot of people that do it on their own. And so I think that both ways are right. And whichever way is right for you is right for you.
Well, I think it's like, you know, like I'm a musician, I'm a producer. And so like, if you think about it, like there's all these hats in the music business, like doesn't necessarily mean I'm a recording engineer. If recording engineer is on the board and they went to school for that, they know exactly what to do. And as a producer, I know what when I hear something, what I want. But the mechanics of how to get to that, well, the guy running the board, he knows that. Now, I can get a little dangerous, and sometimes you see producers jumping on the board, and you're like, why are they on the board? You're not supposed to. But it's kind of case by case. It's like sometimes you want to be really heavily involved and like do everything, and then you start to realize, you know, you're a jack of all trades and you're master of none. Yeah. And like you have to start to realize, am I a musician or am I a producer? Am I an engineer? It's like what is my role?
Yeah. And it doesn't hurt to know how something works for sure. Like that's what I spend a lot of my time doing is educating business decision makers about what they need to know to make a good decision about their website, not necessarily build it themselves because it's tricky. You know, there are some web developers out there that you're going to have to hold their hand and tell them every single thing that you want. And that puts a lot of stress on the business owner because they don't know. Like they don't know. They know how to do what they do. They make widgets or they build houses or they play music. They don't know that it's it should be this way, right? Or that if it's built this way, it's just going to create a monstrous mess down the road. And so I just try to empower people to be able to make good decisions, not necessarily. And if that means your decision is to use that information to build your website on your own, that's totally cool. But if it's just helping you get the right person to get the job done for you, that's great too, right?
Yeah. So maybe like if you think about it, like one question I like to get into is like, what is the elevator pitch for like selling your services to say like you go to somebody that doesn't like the net? A business owner said, well, I do everything in person. I still call people. I don't like the internet. It's like, why do I even need a website? Because I don't like tech, you know? So how do you make the case to somebody like that?
I would say, do you want to grow your business? You know what I mean? Like it's a pretty easy answer because people go online to solve problems. So the old sales cycle used to be that when I bought my first car, right? My dad took me to the dealership and he's like, this is Joe. Joe's going to help you find a car. And I said, okay. And so Joe said, how much money do you have to put down? And I said, I've got $5,000. And he said, how much money can you pay for your monthly payment? And I said, $250. And he said, these are the three cars you can get on my lot that I would trust you as an 18-year-old girl to drive. And I'm like, okay. And I picked one of those cars. Now, the next time that I, like my most recent car, right? So I bought a Highlander. I knew the cubic inches of the back seat. I knew if the car seats would fit in it. I knew what finishes I could get it in. I knew what the gas mileage was. I even knew if there was a rebate. All that that dude needed to do was put me in that car and tell me if he could get me the color that I wanted. Period. So it was just a completely different buying experience. And that's happening all over the place because now people spend 70% of their time out researching, finding answers on their own. And then they come to the salesperson at the end of the buying process. And so if you want more business, just know that they're going out online to find answers. Most of the time.
If you want to be like, you know, like some of these new car dealers, like everything's online and you never even see them. You're dealing with a UI and you buy it, you set up the payments, no haggling, and then they deliver it. So you never even talk to anybody.
That's crazy.
A lot of people are like, yeah, because every time you go, there's this tendency because it's sales that you end up buying something you really didn't need, like the heated seats and the cooled seats. And it's like, well, the heated mirror. Did you really need that? Maybe if you live in Nebraska, maybe you do. But maybe you don't. And so what happens? People get scared. Like if I get in front of that salesperson, am I gonna get weak? Am I gonna end up buying more than what I need?
Yeah, and the one thing that I wish I would have bought 10 years ago when I bought this car, and they were trying to sell it to me, and I said, no, why would I ever need that, is they had this upgrade where you can save the positions of your driver's seat.
Oh, yeah.
And my husband is taller than me. And so I can never find the seat position back, you know? And I'm like, God darn it. Like now, I'm like, I can't even see out my back mirror. And if I would have bought that package, I wouldn't be worried about it. But oh well, the car's paid for. It still drives, and I'm happy with it. So,
well, it's interesting because like we get past the idea, like you know, the internet is here. There's a lot of people that like remote. They like the pressureless sales pitch of only dealing with the UI and making a decision without the pressure coming in, saying, "Oh, buy now. Are you gonna buy it now?" So the idea, like when you're dealing with websites, it may be like the other types, like what are the options that you really need? If somebody's just, you know, they were kind of reluctant to get into online. They realized they need to do it, but then they're like, oh, what's like my bare minimum? And then like there's other concept of like ADA compliance. They're like, is that something I have to do? Or is that something like that I can skip? Or like, so they maybe can talk about that. Because a lot of people are probably confused about that.
You want me to talk about ADA compliance and if you need to do it or not?
Yeah. For some people, they might think they could skip it.
So I feel very passionately about ADA compliance, and we've been really invested in making sure that we are doing it to the best of our abilities for many years now. So here's the deal. When you build an ADA compliant website, you build something that's not just easy for people with disabilities to use. You build something that everyone has an easy time using. You went over to your friend's house and tried to use the microwave before, right? And you're like, I don't even know how to heat food, for crying out loud. Like, I'm a 44-year-old woman who can't even use this microwave. I've been bested by a like $100 appliance, right? But that is never how you want someone to feel on your website. And when you build your website in a way that's ADA compliant, you're not doing that. Like, you're following the rules of web design, and there's different levels of compliancy. Now, some businesses are required by law to go above and beyond. So if you're like a government entity, if you're a school, there's multiple of them, and you can look up and see whether you need to do it or not. I actually did a podcast and blog post combo about it. It's called ADA Compliance Crash Course. And so there are certain businesses that are required by law to be ADA compliant. And then and there's different levels of compliancy that they have to reach, right? Mm-hmm. So a base level ADA compliant website would do things like allow people with colorblindness to be able to read your content. Like, you don't think about it, but there are a lot of men who are colorblind, and they're red, green colorblind. So if red is in your color scheme and you're using it to put text on even like, say, a light yellow, they might not be able to read it because it might just come across as gray and yucky to them, right? So we need to make sure we have that color contrast. We need to make sure that your website allows people with a screen reader to skip navigation, that you can get to pages from other pages. What? I know, it's crazy. And so, see, I'm telling you this stuff and you're like, that's logical, Monica. Like, why would I want people to be able to read this stuff on my site?
Like, some of the ADA compliance from what it seems like is like basic good practice, best practices that you should follow regardless, so that you have, so you don't have somebody like, I want to buy something on this site and I can't figure it out. Like, I want to be able to go right to the point and I can't figure it out. So then they leave.
Yeah. Right? You're so creative. You just blew up your audience and don't make them think. That's not what they're there for. Not for that. Right. They don't want to think about whether or not this is a link or not. Like, your link has to look like a link.
Yeah. Make it so that they want to get to the information about the product. They're going to go like 10 levels down.
Yeah.
Like, if they want to know, like, what are the details? Like, what are the costs? Yeah. What are the options? If you make it very hard, like, well, what am I doing? It's like, I can't, this is so hard. I'm going to skip and go to somewhere else where it's easier.
That's exactly what they're going to do. And then you lost them and they're not coming back. They're probably not. Yeah. So then in the upper levels of compliance, you're doing things like, if you have a video on your website, you're going to offer other ways to consume that content because not everybody can see and not everybody can hear. So they're like coming in other ways. So you would have a transcription for your video. You would have closed captioning on it. And so you just offer other ways for people to consume content, right? So check the type of business you are. There's really clear rules out that the government has put forth. So
I think it's just important to have it, but you know, some people, my daughter, I brought it up because my daughter has disabilities and she's an artist that she's in the artist management and she does like online galleries for artists that are disabled, and they have all these ADA compliant processes. So when artists submit, they have to have the closed captioning for the videos. For all the different types of people that have different disabilities, they are fully compliant and actually are seeking artists that normally don't get the ability to be shown in the gallery. So she's creating the ability for them to have gallery showings in full ADA compliance so that all types of people are able to enjoy art. So that's kind of why I brought it up. But some people don't think that she's run into artists. They're like, oh, that's too much work. And they don't want to do it because they're like, they're so into their art that they can't take the time to enable some of the features.
It's not even hard half the time anymore. Like, you just have to begin with the end in mind. There's so many things that can help you through the process, you know? And I really feel like an ADA compliant site is a site that everyone can use. And if you think about it, we all, even if you don't have a disability, there are times where you are distracted. You are like not at the peak of functioning, right? And true story, I was going through a website. I thought it was the right website. I was distracted. Okay. My husband was like, you need to come up for dinner right now. My kids are both talking in one ear. I'm completely distracted. And I ended up buying like hundreds of dollars worth of concert tickets from a scam site. That's a real example of me. Like I, at that moment, I'm not going to say I was disabled, but I was extremely distracted and not functioning at the top of my ability. Right. So now, like, imagine in another scenario though. So all of your mobile friendly websites need to have buttons that are big enough for people to click on with like any finger. Right. Mm-hmm. And people don't do it. They have like really weird still mobile sites. So I'm a mom and my baby's crying and I think that she's sick and I'm trying to figure out how to soothe her. And I'm navigating my phone with one hand and I'm trying to like click on the button and it's not working. And I can't find the answer that I want to like soothe my baby. And I mean, that's not a disability. That's just a real life situation. Right. And so you're like blocking these people from being able to get what they want. And that stinks. Don't do that to people. Like, just be nice.
Yeah.
Just be nice.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that just go with, you know, whatever is affordable, the kind of quick fix. And if like they can use something that's a template and they don't think about the navigation, they don't think about the design. I happen to be in software design. So we do a lot of UI. Mm-hmm. I happen to do design for like banks and insurance companies have these big mm-hmm. policy administration systems. Now, a lot of times the execs, they don't really care what the CRM people have to do. Mm-hmm. So they'll try to say, well, you know, do it the cheapest, fastest way we can do it. And then we're like pointing out that if we do it like this, it's going to be more efficient. It's going to be more likely to not have errors. And they're still like, do it by the deadline. So I'm like, okay. competing levels of what's going on.
I'm with you. And then you're like, yeah, but now it just took them 14 clicks and they had to go find something someplace else and paste it in this box in order to make it work. And now we added a human error in here when I could have just made it right the first time. And then they would have actually used it. Because like at a certain point, people just won't use it.
And they complain about all the errors mm-hmm. and the inefficiency. Well, if we spend the money to make it efficient and not have the human error factor reduce as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, that's too much work. It's like, no. You don't realize how much you're going to save. And sometimes the upfront investment is worth it. But a lot of people are just so bottom line. They just see the short-term cost and they're like, well, that's too high.
Yeah. There's a long-term kickback that's going to happen to you. Like unhappy employees not fulfilling their full potential as workers at your company. And then it also, that funnels right on out to the product that you're providing as well. Because if it takes them longer to do their job, then you're going to have to charge more for your product. So that way you can keep producing it. And then you might actually price yourself right on out of the competition. And then you don't have customers anymore. Yay. Yeah,
it's just smarter to like always have like I try to look at it as a holistic picture. Mm-hmm. Right? And you always have budgets, and I understand you have budgets and you have this, but it's like you might be able to figure out the prioritization of what you're trying to do.
Right? Yeah, so always try to make a good decision about it. Like even the other day, I was automating something and I really, really wanted just for one of my project managers to be able to just put something in this one cell and have it populate out into the database and do what I wanted it to do. And I had messed with it for like 2 hours and I was like, okay, so I do not know how I'm going to do this without some like real fancy mumbo jumbo. And so I, you know, I called up the person that I was making it for and I was like, hey, what if you just pasted it right here instead? And she was like, oh yeah, that's super easy. And I'm like, ugh. All right, cool. That's what we're going with it then.
Yeah, you have to like different levels for different people. You know, it's kind of like not one size fits all because you don't, every person's different. Yeah. And, you know, some people might like, no, it's got to be the way I said.
Yeah.
And other people are more willing to listen to your like alternatives. Like as an analyst, a lot of times I give people options. It's like, here's option 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
And there's the cost. Here's the timelines.
Yeah.
Like if you want this one, it costs this much. It takes this long. If you want this one, it costs this much. It takes this long. And so then they start making decisions based on, but then you also say, well, this one is probably going to make you have less errors.
Yeah.
So then if you have that grid and say, whoa, less errors, less problems, more efficiency, then like maybe if they're more evolved, they'll pick that one.
Yeah. Exactly. And I just think that if you're helping people build anything, it doesn't matter if it's a house or a website, you're the expert and you're trying to help them make the decision that's right for them. It's not my place to make your decision. It's my place to give you the information that you need to be able to make an educated decision. And then when you are looking at the option, it's also my responsibility to help you understand if you choose A, this is what you get, this is what you don't get. So there's pros and cons of A, pros and cons of B, pros and cons of C, right? And it could be the timeline, it could be the functionality, it could be the efficiency, it could be the longevity, right? It could be anything, but my role is to help people make sure that they know that. Because if you know that, then you can make the right decision for you.
And also then it gets to the point like when you finally get that project going, you start doing things like performance testing and like speed testing, like okay, load testing, like so some websites, you know, like the government got in trouble with some of the, like, you know, some of the Obamacare sites when it first hit, like it got this massive load day one and it couldn't handle it, right? And so and so that you have to have performance tests. It's like, how fast is it going to run? Is it going to be slow? Yeah, as you're doing things, is it got a lot of lag? Is it feel like, so if somebody goes to something and it feels really laggy, they're going to be like, well, this other site's not laggy.
Yeah.
So they're going to kind of pair where they go. And if they feel that like this thing doesn't work, is not ready for prime time, then they're like, eh, I don't know about that.
Yeah. Their website isn't working then. It's like not being a member of their team. It's not doing its job. Because I mean, and I'm not saying that I haven't ever, like, we made a website probably like 10 or 12 years ago. And it was a really fun marketing project. We teamed up with a couple other businesses in town and we hid this little logo on their websites. The goal was just to drive traffic to somebody's site, right? So everybody got on social media. We're like, hey, you know, at 5 o'clock, we call it the Como Cub Crawl. You're going to go out to these 12 participating businesses. You're going to find the icon. The first one to find the icon gets a $150 gift certificate to the grocery store. Okay. Well, we definitely, we tanked that website, like the Como Cub Crawl that had all the logos of all the businesses on it. We blew it up the first day. We had no idea that it was going to be so successful. And so it just, And then we adjusted the hosting space and all of its requirements. So that way in the future, it didn't do that anymore. And it taught us a valuable lesson for people who are doing things like having music festivals or having really big 2-day fundraisers, you know, and that kind of stuff. It's like, well, here's the deal. The 2 days of the music festival, people are going to be on that website a lot and you want it to work. And so it's got to be in this big, bad mamma jamma of a hosting space. But hey, so blowing up our own site helped us learn how to not blow up someone else's. Yay!
Yeah, so that's a question. Like, if you're in a business model where like, oh, I'm going to have a big artist and I know if I put this artist on for selling merch and the first day they come in, it is big top 10 artist. and my normal traffic is like this, but mm-hmm. then it's going to go exponential.
Yeah.
So do you have, like, you have to set up ahead of time the ability to ramp up on demand, knowing that this event, like Black Friday or this big sale is going to trigger, you know, this kind yeah. of thing, and how fast can I actually get that expanded headroom to be able yeah. to do that? You know, is that yeah, something some people didn't understand before, and now there's better ways to do that?
Yeah. So what you would have to do is find a hosting company that allows you to scale the resources for your hosting space when you need them to. And we have used Pantheon for this. We've also used Liquid Web for this. And you would scale up your resources for your site when you need to. And if you don't have enough, you scale it up again, right? But it has to be with a company that can do that and can do it like seamlessly. And not all of them can.
How much lead time does somebody have to usually even tell a company like that? Like, do they have to have it in their business plan months ahead? Like, could they do it within weeks or days? Or how much, like, what's like the typical like business case?
So most of the time you could even do it on your own. You don't necessarily have to have like the hosting company. Like, does that make sense? Like if you yeah. know how to work their system and you have it set up in the right type of environment, then you can go in and click buttons and make things happen. But I really don't know how fast you could turn around. I would think that you could do it in weeks for sure. I don't know about days. You might be, if you've got somebody who you can talk to on the phone, you might be able to get it done that fast, but you're going to have to figure out how to do it. So that's why you need the human on the phone, right? Because you haven't done it before. Yeah. But we always did it and do it for our clients. We know it's coming up, and so we're doing it well ahead of time.
It's usually better to have a plan. Like if you know your business model, like if you go into building your website, you never tell anybody involved with it that you have these peak times. Mm-hmm. You just assume, it's always going to handle it, right? That's something yeah. like you gotta tell people, like, well, what's your traffic look like? And do you have these unforeseen events, or do you have do you have these situations that could trigger these massive, you know, people suddenly visiting your site?
Most of the time, if people have that much traffic coming to their site, it's their welfare. You know what I mean? It's a huge part of their business. And so those people, they should know better than a host on a stupid platform anyway, because you never want it to go down. It's got to be right. And the average website is not getting this type of traffic to it. Because doesn't. Even if you suddenly start running Google ads and it's super great and there's all kinds of people going to it, you're not going to be
some kind of ticket master selling tickets to like Taylor Swift. That's not something yes. that you're doing every day, right?
Yeah.
Most people are not even in that zone, that they mm-hmm. probably never really run into it.
No.
You know, but you know, it's just, if for some reason you're doing stuff that's based on like social media, mm-hmm. right? And it's somewhere based on like whatever's the biggest thing going on, and suddenly you can't ramp up if you're dealing with some kind of gossip or something. You know, it depends on what mm-hmm. you're dealing with, but you have to, you would have to know what you do. Like, so if you have, to have a good understanding of like, what is your business, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And if your business is running online and how much sales you're doing online and what that takes, I mean,
it's kind of common sense. Common sense, but common sense sometimes is not so common.
Well, I do think though that most of the time when you start your business and you live and learn, and I think that if you're just starting an e-commerce site, the odds of it going, like, unless you've got some amazing influencer backing you, the odds of it being a completely viral product suddenly, I mean, unless Tom Brady's behind it, I don't know.
Most of the time it's the unhappy path. It's like the not standard case. It's not the thing that's going to happen all the time you think about it. But so maybe kind of going back to a kind of bare bones idea of, like what should go on a homepage to draw people in, depending on like what, if they're a service business, if they're a widget business, or they're like some other types of business models, you know, is there different based on if you're like selling services, you're selling products, you know, what is the kind of rule of thumb based on like what you do?
So I feel like there's a few things that need to happen on a homepage. One is that people need to immediately know what you do. Like it cannot be a question as to what you do. And then the second thing that you get to do is you get to help them find what they're looking for really fast. And then you get to tell them what you want them to do, right? Because that's part of the deal too. And then the last thing is that you get to invite them to the party. Do this thing. It'll be great. And so the first thing you have to think about is who's coming to my website and what do they need right off the bat, right? So we need to speak to them in a language that they can understand and tell them what you do succinctly, not with flowery poetic stanzas, but in words that they will understand, that will speak to what they might want from you, right? And that should be immediate. Don't make them think. You can do that right up in the top of your website, like the big hero image, the big banner that's at the top of the website. Yeah. Tell them what you do. And a lot of times I tell people to think about this kind of like an advertisement. So a lot of times it's a video or it's slides or it's a static image. So if you were going to have a billboard, what would you put on it? Something simple. I see people misdesign billboards all the time. Because if you can't read it without just glancing at it, then it's too much and you're going to get in a wreck, right? And so that's like, think about that. The top of your website, that's like a billboard. People should know immediately what you do. Don't make me think too hard about it or I'm getting into a wreck or I'm leaving. And so then you're like, okay, so what do they need to do to take action? What would they need to know about? And so sometimes you need to show your services because it's really obvious what they would go look for in certain businesses, right? And then other times you might be showing resources to them. So that way they can learn about why you do it the best way or how you solve their problems. You might share events. You could show links to your portfolio. You could show a testimonial, right? These are all things that are helping them understand like what you do and how to get in and get what they want quickly. And like I said, then you get to decide where you want them to go. And so imagine that you do have that portfolio out there or you do have a testimonial. This is kind of your pitch, right? Like, hey, I'm awesome. And then last but not least, you would, like I said, invite them to the party, which is where you're like, hey, sign up for our email list or call us for a free quote or stop on by the restaurant. You know, here's the address. Like, give them what they need to be able to take the next step. It's always so annoying when you go to a website and you're like, all I wanted to know is the address and I can't find it, or the phone number and I can't find it.
Yeah, the phone number is buried. That always, I see a lot of medical sites where the phone number, I can't find the phone number. It's like buried so far deep. It's like, I guess you don't really want me to call.
They don't, probably.
Which it's kind of designed that they don't want you to call.
Yeah. So those are the things that I would say you should put on a homepage.
Yeah, that's real clear. Because if you really want people to get your phone number, you don't want to bury it down deep. Man.
No.
If you
could even put it way up at the top. If what you do is emergency plumbing services, put your phone number up at the top because they just see emergency plumbing services. I have water all over the place. And they call the phone number. They don't care about anything else. They just want to know if you can come fix their crap right now. There's other times where you might be an influencer or a coach or a consultant. And in that case, you're going to have a long, slow, steady roll through this like online relationship with them before you probably get business from them. So you might be like, sign up for my email newsletter. You know, it just depends on the business that you are.
And I also had a question. There's a lot of like these like chatbot assistants, right? Uh-huh. So I might be on a site and I'm a musician. I'm trying to find out how come my SEO program I got set up is not performing the way I want to. And I want to talk to somebody. I go into the site and they've got this bot and it's making me answer like question after question after question after question. And I can't get to the part where I just want to send the complaint and say what it is and actually mm-hmm. get to a live person. And they've actually done it so that you can't do it right away. So it seems like it's, is that because they want to dissuade that type of,
I think they want to help you find the answer without you having to talk to a person. And
so you find
I
people get frustrated with that and they just want to
I mean,
go right.
I get frustrated with that. Let's be real. It all depends on what your business is, right? So if I have an enormous library full of resources that will solve almost all of your problems, then I probably am going to send you to the chatbot where you can search for something and find answers. But I also feel like it's kind of like calling in and sitting in a phone tree and not being able to click zero to talk to a human being. It's not any different, right? And so if you think about that chatbot like that, it's different. Now, if what you've got is a chatbot, okay, let's say that your chat is for people to initiate a sales conversation with you. You should have some humans on there, I think.
Right away. Because you should be able to get to the salesperson like right away. You shouldn't be trying to figure out exactly every little detail. You probably want to send that right to the sales guy.
Yeah.
If you can funnel it to the right sales guy, let's say you've got a bunch of different types of sales, like your boats and airplanes, and maybe you don't want the airplane guy getting the boat people. So maybe you want to kind of screen them, but you don't want to overscreen them. So then they're like, I can't get to the sales guy.
Exactly. And that makes perfect sense. And people do that with email forms all the time as well. You know what I mean? You fill out an email form. Well, what type of service are you interested in? Or are you reporting a problem? You know, and it makes sense to do the same thing in a chatbot too, I think. But I don't think that every website needs a chatbot. There was a flutter of humans in my town that were like, I think I need to add a chatbot to my website. And I'm like, you're like nearly retired and you're not even trying to grow your business anymore. I don't know. Like, it just doesn't feel right to me.
It might actually, drive people away if they don't like the experience, you know, because it feels like you're in a phone tree or you're on hold and you can't get to the person.
Yep. I mean, your processes are, I always feel like your processes are part of your marketing. So if you were a restaurant and it took 100 years for the server to come and take your drink order, you're not happy, you know, or if the food takes 2 hours to get there and your kids are literally passing out at the table, also not happy. Right. So I think that people just need to think of their business processes the same way that any other business processes things, right? And so if you are forcing your customers to interact with a chatbot, it has to be an employee that is doing its job. And if you're asking people to interact with your website as part of your business, it also has to be an employee that's doing its job. Like if it doesn't do its job, it's not building a bridge to doing business with you or a bridge to finding answers to problems and keeping clients happy. It's like building a wall.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's not what we want. And it's really interesting because people will let their websites go on like crap for a really long time because either they're not using their website the way other people use it, so they don't know, or they're intimidated to fix it because it can be a major undertaking. Like for the same reason that I will probably never switch email marketing companies until I retire ever again. I'm sure people feel like that about their website too.
Yeah,
but I want people to think about their website like it's a member of their team, like it's an employee, and have expectations for it and make sure it's meeting those expectations.
Yeah, that's interesting because I wonder how many business owners actually go and try their website and see what the customer experience is for themselves.
They don't.
And actually see like, oh, this thing is really hard to deal with. Maybe you thought it wasn't, but it's like, just go in, like if you're going to a place where something works, like you go to site X and I can get 5 clicks and boom, I'm out. Like 3 clicks, I'm out. And I got exactly where I wanted. And then my site, 20 clicks, and I still don't know where I am.
They really don't think about it. Like I went to, so we work with a utilities co-op and I was auditing their site because there's a lot of clients that we audit their sites for them at least once a year. I'm looking at it and I'm going, what are people doing? Where are they going? How'd they get there? Is it loading right? Like what's broken now? So I was like, hey, did you know that the third most visited page on your site, you can't get to it from any navigation anywhere? You have to click on a first level or a secondary level navigation page and then click on another page and then scroll all the way down to that page. And there's a link to the thing that people are looking for. And that's what people are looking for on your website, is that right there. And they were like, oh, really? And I'm like, I mean, unless Google's lying to me, yes. And so I'm like, hey, here's the deal. We can fix this. We can fix this. We can put it in your navigation because we know people are looking for it, right?
Yeah, put it where people expect it to be instead of where it's unexpected.
Yeah, well, Google knows that people want it and it's serving it in search results. So if you don't have Google Analytics and you're not really sure what people are looking for on your website, Google makes great assumptions about this because it is tracking your website, whether you installed its tracking or not. And so if you just Google for your business, if your website is optimizing and Google's crawling all your pages, what you should see is probably your homepage at the top, but it might not be your homepage. It could be something else, because that would be like the most visited and entered page on your website. And then underneath it, it's going to be like indented, like a bulleted list. And there's going to be like 3 to 5 pages underneath there. If you looked at your Google Analytics and you looked at that search result listing, the most visited pages would almost always be those pages that are right underneath your homepage when you Google for your business name. And wow, so if those aren't listed in your main navigation or at least on your homepage, you are failing yourself because Google knows where people are going.
That's a cool thing. I was going to ask about like how you measure metrics to make continuous improvement. So mm-hmm. if you wanted people to go to a certain page and then you find that nobody's going there, mm-hmm. And you went and tried to do sales campaigns and everything, but your navigation is totally, you know, not really, people can't find where you want them to go.
Yeah.
So like if you actually see where, you know, where people are going versus where you want them to go.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, maybe we need to change that. Continuous like an assessment, or you go to a person like you and mm-hmm. you do the assessment to help.
Yeah. We totally do that. And I'm like a website detective. I'm really, but there's a couple of programs that work really well that are free that you can set up on your website. One is Google Analytics, and you can absolutely set that up. So what Google Analytics measures is how people behave on your site, like physically on your site. So what pages do they go to? How long are they engaged? What pages did they come in from? What sources did they come in from? Was it social media? Was it email? It can even tell you what email campaign brought the most people to your website and which email campaign brought the most money, you know? And so if you're selling things online. So that's a really powerful tool. And then the next one that I use a lot when diagnosing things like, why aren't people getting to the page that I want them to go to? Because the first thing I would do is look at, like, I would think, oh, well, where did we want people to go? And then I look at Google Analytics and I'm like, people aren't going there. And then I look at the website and I'm like, that doesn't really make sense because we're putting it on the website, right? So then I'm going to go into Google Search Console. And Google Search Console tells you how Google, as a browser, is interacting with your website. So it tells you some about people. It tells you what words people are using to find certain pages of your site. It tells you where those pages of your site are ranking among other pages or other websites in the search listings. It'll tell you what their click-through rate is. So then I start thinking about like, oh, okay. Well, this page isn't associated with like the words that we think it should be associated with. Well, maybe we just didn't use them. Well, that stinks. That's not what you want, right? Or another thing that can happen is they think that their products or services would be searched for this way, or maybe they didn't think about it at all. and it actually turns out that people call it this, right? So
oh,
if you
call something else, you have the wrong name for it.
Yeah. So like, for example, if I went out and I was looking for, I want a drywall contractor. I want somebody to put drywall up in the house, right? So if I search for drywall and that's what you thought your keyword was, you're going to get Menards, Lowe's, like all the people that physically sell drywall.
Sell the drywall, not install it.
Yes. And then if you look, like in some regions, people call, they look for a drywall contractor or a drywall company, right? But they're different. And Google sometimes associates keywords overlapping and it knows that they mean the same thing, and sometimes it doesn't. So you got to figure out like what people are actually searching for, because it could be that internally you call it whatever, but everyone else calls it something else.
You're also saying it could be regional. So you might need, like if you're in a region, you need to pipe, and that's where your primary sales are coming from, that region. You need to understand what the term is for your region or for your environment you're in. Yeah.
Yes. And there's a free tool that Google offers called Keyword Planner. It's inside of Google Ads. So you have to have a Google Ads account to use it. But you can actually restrict the data down to a certain demographic area, or geographic area is what I should say, because it's a geographic area, again, not a demographic area. and then you can look at the search and how it works and looks there. So
awesome. You can get the right word for the start.
Yep. Yeah. And that's fun. Like getting the right words from the start is great. Right. But also retrofitting it isn't as hard as you would think, you know, once you get it figured out.
Cause that's the whole like magic, you know, the SEO and making sure that you got the keywords right, that you're actually, you know, you're actually going after the right people that you might like, what if you actually think your customer is this type of person and you actually got the wrong profile?
Yeah. Well, that can be tricky, right? And especially for, there are so many businesses now that are, they're solving problems and people didn't know that they could be solved that way, right? And so if they're trying to optimize their site for, I don't know, some type of really specific therapy, right? But people don't know those words, it will probably optimize for those words because they're using it all over the place. But the problem isn't with the website. The problem is that the people aren't educated about the service that you offer and how it solves their problem. They might actually be looking for ways to stop terrible headaches, right? So, cause that's all they know. So those people are just at a different spot in the buying cycle. They don't know. They know what problem they have. I always say people that go to your site, they either know what they want or who they are. Like, I want this type of therapy because I know it exists and I know it's going to solve my problem. I want to buy this car, right? Or I know that I am a woman with a headache. And so you have to know your audience and whether they understand what you offer and that it solves their problem. And if they don't, then you need to be talking to their problem, not about your product.
Yeah. So you got to get aligned. Product. Yeah. Alignment's real important, because if you're not like aligned or you kind of miss the boat, like sometimes you target very narrow.
Yeah.
It's kinda like if with a lot of us musicians, like we used to target like regional areas or target the US, and now we kind of target worldwide, because like sometimes we don't know if the song's going to make it in Australia or Argentina. So if we put it in a place where it actually gets to places where it's actually going to go outside the US, go international, it might do real good in the Pacific. It might do good in the EU. It could do really well. But if you only say, well, I'm going to target this for New York only.
Yeah.
Then you might be missing the boat.
Yeah. Because even though targeting for a specific geographic region makes sense for people who can only serve a specific geographic region. But if you're targeting for a certain type of music, well, there are certain people that like that type of music, right? So you're narrowing the field by other determinants. It's just not a geographic determinant that you're narrowing it by. Because if you're trying to give it, send it to everybody, you're wasting a lot of advertising dollars when you could give it to the people who want it.
Yeah, you could say like in, you know, electronic music, Berlin is a known place, kind of like London, Berlin. So if you send a track that's really heavy electronic experimental, sending it to the Berlin area, is going to get the attention of all those people who are doing very specific electronic type of work, going back to Trinino. And there's a lot of people still doing that, right? So if you want to get to that market, like, okay, well, I'm going to gear it toward the people who are like Berlin heads. That's where their head's at. Mm-hmm. And so you'll get that niche. And if there's certain people in there, the magazines and blogs that you want to kind of push your thing, then you want to hit those people.
Yeah.
So if you kind of know where your genre is and where it's kind of hitting, and you have a lot of tools now where you can see where these genres are big, like hip hop's here and EDM's here, trance is here, trap's there. So you can make certain assumptions and target things.
Well, and if you're looking at your website data as well, you can see, oh, look, there's tons of people that visit my website from this area. Huh. Maybe I should open another location there. Or maybe there's another location that is named the exact same thing as your business name. And so you should actually exclude that location from all of your data so you can make a better decision, because like they're tanking your good results, right?
Yeah.
Unintended consequence. Yeah. So you can use the data to tell so many stories and learn about what people are doing and why they're there. But you also have to be able to, you know, connect the dots. It's like detective work.
It's interesting. You mentioned email marketing, and a lot of people, you know, talk about, oh, email's dead. Everybody's doing text. Everybody's texting ad campaigns instead of email. So how much effort should I still put into email? And what would your kind of rule of thumb be like on email campaigning versus like using like text or other types of methods?
So that's a tricky one. If you are business to consumer, I could see text working pretty good for you because you're business to consumer, right? And I'm with my phone, and the open rate on a text message is like a gajillion times higher. That's a very technical number that I just pulled out there. It's like a gajillion times higher. Last time I checked, I think it was like 90, in the high 90%, right? Yeah. That someone's going to open your text. Now, having said that, I'm subscribed to way more email newsletters than I am to text, because I don't want you bothering me on my phone unless I really like you. So for business to consumer, I could see where texting would make a lot of sense. I feel like if you are a service-based business, I would use text to facilitate the process of delivering your service and make it more convenient for the client. Like if you repair cars and you're like, okay, Monica, we got your car checked in. It's going back for its oil change. And then you're like, okay, it's done with its oil change. You can come pick it up whenever you want. And then you send me another text and you're like, all right, would you fill out the survey and tell us how we did? Okay, I'm good with all that stuff, right? What I don't want is for you to text me 17 times every day about getting my car oil changed, because it doesn't make any sense, because I don't have to get it changed every single day, right?
Yeah, you're trying to send a coupon every day for the oil change, and like, well, I don't need it for another 30 days. So unless you're going to do it when I need it, based on my vehicle, if you're smart enough to have something that only when I need the next oil change, you happen to tell me I have the coupon, is better than send it to me 15 times.
Yeah, but they do a good job. And then what you should be doing is in about like 3 months or however many months, that make and model needs to have an oil change. You should text me again to set up my next appointment, because then I don't have to call you and I'm much more likely to do it, right? The same thing could be done with a hairdresser. You know, hey, your appointment's confirmed. Just remember that you've got the appointment tomorrow. Dentists do it. Doctors do it. It works. It's great. It's a great way to facilitate the process, build trust, communicate with people, right? But don't abuse it. Like I've got one that I unsubscribed from. Like I treated myself to a really nice pair of cowboy boots. They're so cute. Okay. But I'm not a girl who spends that kind of money on boots all that often. I'm going to wear those things for like 15 years. Okay.
You're not going to buy one every people, month, right?
Not they're texting me like twice a week to go buy more boots. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not. Gonna buy, like, that was really expensive and I'm very happy with them, but I don't need any more, but thank you, you know.
Yeah, you now, get these big ticket items, like I'm not gonna buy my my oven
No.
Like a crazy oven, like more than like every 5-6 years. And I'd rather not buy it for 10 years, but I'm probably going to have to buy it in 5. But
no.
Because that's the way things are. Things be like don't last like they used to. But,
I know. But, especially yeah. refrigerators and dishwashers.
Yeah. I went through like 3 refrigerators in 5 years, which my mom would like take 20 years to go through one.
And I'm my like, fridge is like really small. And so you can barely buy one, like you can barely buy one that fits in the spot. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know what? I don't care. You can half work. I'll figure it out. So then back to the email marketing piece, right? Now, if you're business to business, businesses don't text each other nearly as much as they email each other, right? So just make smart decisions. I email all my clients because that's how businesses communicate is via email. So I don't think that email marketing is dead by any means. I think it's still a very reliable form of communication. I also don't think that direct mail is dead. And so that is my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I've gotten information through direct mail that I was surprised. You'd be surprised what people actually read in their mail. Mm-hmm. It depends on how you present it. And you got to be smart about how you present it. But yeah, it's interesting. Like there are a lot of things that people want to say because of, you know, the modern world with AI and everything. Oh, you know, you don't need this. We just use AI. Mm-hmm. And like that, well, AI isn't for everything.
No.
You know? So like the thing is, like you said, the chatbot isn't for everything. Mm-mm. So sometimes people, they want to jump on the next thing with it. Maybe it's not appropriate for what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. So just really think about your audience and know who they are. And then communicate with them the way that they want to communicate with you. And that's the greatest thing you can do. I mean, like I don't know, here's a crazy idea. You could pick up the phone and talk to people.
That's amazing. Everybody wants to talk to the AI assistant. And then like the AI assistant is going to hit hand. So I don't have to have anybody that's a living person because the AI is going to do it. And then you find that the AI is driving everybody away. It's like, I thought it was supposed to be the big panacea. Well, you know, maybe not. Maybe it's not there yet. It's not data yet. You know, it's not Star Trek Next Generation. It's not, you know, it doesn't have, it's not really like my best sales guy or my best saleswoman. It's like, they actually can close the sale. My AI is driving everybody away. So I'm like, no, I don't know.
And any type of automated marketing can do the same thing. You know, it's tricky, friends, but I think that running a business is just a gigantic science experiment and you make a hypothesis and try to set your controls and then go after the answer. And that is my degree in agriculture coming out, all that science.
But, it's a lot of continuous improvement, right? Or do people feel they like, I just did it and I just set it and forget it? Or would you recommend that like a lot, because the world is so dynamic, the assessment of like where you are, how often does that have to be done? Or does it need to be done like real time continuously?
Like for a website, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it really depends on how you're generating business for your company. So if I am generating business by going to networking events and talking to people and shaking hands and getting leads that way, I need to have a website that is set up to show people that I'm awesome, let them know that I understand where they're coming from and that I can help them solve their problems. And here's how you contact me. Here's how the process works. This is why I'm cool, right? That's what that website's supposed to do. Now, if what you're trying to do is, and so that type of website, you can set it up. You're going to have to update it sometimes. You need to put up like recent examples of your work or new products. You need to edit specials. You need to make sure that all the staff is appropriate and they're not like when you fire people, you need to take them off the website, that kind of stuff. Because there comes a time where you don't even talk about your products the same way anymore because the conversation evolves because people evolve, you know? So I think that those types of websites need to be updated every so often. They don't have to be like, you're not feeding the beast, right? Because that's not how you're getting your business. Now, if what you're intending to do is generate leads through your website, then you're going to have to feed the beast doing something, right? And so most of the time, you're either going to have a podcast or like a video, like you would vlog which I think is now podcasting. I don't know, vlogging and podcasting. Well, I feel like they're the same thing.
Vlogging was the original podcast.
Yeah. Or you would have an audio podcast, or you would have a blog, right? Something that you're continually updating your website with, and you would be creating a post for every episode or for every blog post. It's got to be a new like page on your website. And you would want to pick topics that people are actually searching for, questions that they're actually asking. So that way, when people search, your website shows up for it, and you can start the relationship with someone, you know, during that 70% of the time that they're spending researching. So those types of websites, they need to be updated regularly, like
more dynamic. Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes weekly, you know, sometimes more than weekly. It just depends on what your goals are and how many people you're trying to feed through this website, right? If you're just trying to feed yourself, you could probably do it weekly or biweekly. I think at a minimum monthly, but it just takes so long to get any momentum if you're only publishing monthly that it
kind of... You do have to kind of, like if you, the more you show up, the more like with my podcast, like some podcasts will do 1, 2, 3 episodes a month. I'm doing like 5 or 6 a week. I get a different, like based on the frequency of how you show up, depends on your popularity. Like if you're big and people expect you to only show up 1 or 2 or 4 times a month, that's fine. But if you're kind of in a situation where like, if you're more frequent, you're doing it every other day, 5 or 6 episodes a week, that's kind of like what your routine is.
Yeah. And it's the same with blogging too. Like when we first started blogging at MakeCreate, we were publishing like 14 or 15 blog articles a month, right? So that way we could get that base built, because it's a marathon. It's not a sprint, right? And so every piece of content that you put out has the opportunity to bring in some visitors. Some of them are going to hit, some of them are going to go flat, and some of them are going to blow up. But you got to do them to reap the benefits of the ones that blow up and the ones that do okay, right? So, I mean, every month, I mean, I have articles from years and years ago that still bring thousands of visitors a month to my website. And then I have ones that I thought were going to be really great that don't bring anyone in. Yeah, like, but it's that consistency. And so, yes, especially at first, I feel like ramping up by having enough content that you are going to show up in searches to be found is important. And then I feel like moving forward, you also have to think about your audience and how they're going to consume the content. So if I'm always talking about marketing and I'm always talking to a business person and I'm always talking about the exact same topic, then I probably don't need to talk about it 6 times a week. Because the business person who follows my podcast does not want to hear about websites 6 times a week. That is annoying, because it's going to take you months to even make the decision to actually rebuild your stuff. So you're just like, it needs to be a slower trickle of information coming at you for that type of person. And also there's some podcasts that are shorter, blogs that are shorter, right? And so if it's a really short form content, then maybe you could serve the business owner 5 times a week and they would be okay, because it's like a 5-minute or like a glance at it, skim it kind of thing, right? So I think we just need to be cognizant once again of our audience. And I totally agree with you though. Anytime that you're starting out, if you can really hit it hard to begin with, you are going to bring in the traffic for a long time because of that activity. And then you can go into maintenance mode, and it's kind of like going on a diet. You're going on a cleanse to start your marketing.
That makes sense. But thank you. We always end up hitting the hour mark faster than we ever realized, and we actually hit it. But it's been really enjoyable talking to you, and we want to make sure people will go to mayyecreate.com. And like I said, you can go through that and just click through everywhere we're published, so you don't have to remember it. But again, thank you for being on the show, and we appreciate it. And this was live on YouTube and Twitch, and we'll put it on Facebook. It'll be on a bunch of other platforms, all the platforms where you can listen to or watch a podcast that are popular these days. But thank you again for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.